November, Year of God, 893. 1. Imperial Palace, City of Chiraeth, Kingdom of Chisholm, and HMS Dawn Wind, 54 Dolphin Reach.
What do you think about Merlin's and Al's latest reports on Coruscant, Michael? Charlian asked.
She and Caleb sat in Prince Timon's suite, the rooms just down the hall from their own suite, which had been converted into a combined library and office. It lacked the remodeled heated floors of their bedroom, but a brand-new cast-iron stove from the Hausmann Ironworks had been installed, and the coal fire in its iron belly gave off a welcome warmth.
"You've both seen the same imagery I have from Merlin Snark's," Michael Stainer pointed out over the plug in her right ear.
His voice sounded remarkably clear for someone better than 4,000 miles as the wyvern flew from Chiraeth.
"What do you think?"
"No, you don't," Caleb shot back with a grin. "We asked you first."
Stainer cleared his throat severely, and Charlian grinned at her husband. Their contact lenses brought them the Archbishop's image as he sat in his shipboard cabin, looking out over a sunset sea, with Arden draped across his lap. His own lenses showed him her grin as well, and he made a face at her. But then he shrugged, and his tone was more serious as he continued.
"As far as the church goes, I think we've been extremely blessed with Gerling, and especially men like Father Timon," he said very soberly. "We're not going to find any Carisian patriots in Coruscant, even among the clergy, any time soon. But the reform element in the Coruscantian hierarchies proved rather stronger than I dared hope before the invasion. And the really good news, in many ways, is how many of those reformists are native-born Coruscantians, like Father Timon. That puts a Coruscantian face on Voices of Reason, and that's going to be incredibly valuable down the road."
"From a more purely political perspective," the Archbishop continued, "I think General Cherman and Anvil Rock and Tartarian are about as on top of things as we could reasonably ask, Your Majesty." "That's Benjamin's opinion, too, for that matter. Neither of us sees how anybody could be doing a better job, anyway, given the circumstances of Hector's murder and the fact that there probably aren't more than a half dozen people in all of Coruscant, even among the most reform-minded members of the priesthood, who think Caleb wasn't behind it."
"Agreed," Caleb said, his own expression sober. "All the same, I have to admit, I'd feel a lot better if the Brethren would let us go ahead and bring Howell fully inside. If we'd been able to give somebody in Coruscant one of Merlin's comms, I'd sleep a lot more soundly at night."
Charlian nodded, although, truth to tell, she wasn't entirely certain she would have been in favor of giving Howell Cherman a communicator. It wasn't that she doubted the Marine General's loyalty, intelligence, or mental toughness in the least. No, the problem was that despite Cherman's genuine hatred for the Group of Four, he still believed, deeply and completely, in the Church's doctrine. As with Regis Yawants and Marak Sandirs, there was simply no way to know how he might react if they tried to tell him the truth.
"And it's not as if they're the only ones that's true of," she acknowledged unhappily to herself. "Or as if they were the only ones who could be so much more capable if we only dared to tell them everything we know."
Unfortunately, they couldn't, despite the difficulties that created. It was bad enough that they couldn't tell Grey Harbor, given his position as the effective first counselor of the Carisian Empire. But Sandirs, the Baron of Green Mountain, was at least equally important in light of his duties as first counselor of the Kingdom of Chisholm.
"Not to mention the tiny fact that he's Mother's lover, whether I'm supposed to know that or not, and the man who taught me everything I know about being a queen," she thought unhappily. Why, oh why, couldn't the two political advisers Caleb and I both lean most heavily upon have just a little bit less integrity, where the church is concerned at least?
I've done my best to ginger up Jean and the others, Your Grace, Stainer told Caleb, his tone a bit wry. And I have to say, in the interests of fairness, that they've actually become much more flexible about approving additions to your inner circle. After being so miserly with their approval for so long, for so many entire generations of the Brethren when you come down to it, that's really quite remarkable when you think about it.
Agreed, Caleb said once more, acknowledging his Archbishop's slightly pointed but unmistakably admonishing tone.
Agreed, and however irritating it may sometimes be, I have to admit that having someone put the brakes on my own occasional bursts of excessive enthusiasm isn't exactly a bad thing.
The Emperor made a face.
I think all monarchs have a tendency to fall prey to expediency if they aren't careful. And sometimes I think the rest of the Brethren might have had a point when they worried about that youthful impatience of mine while they debated telling me about it.
I don't think I'd go quite that far, Stainer replied. At the same time, though, I won't pretend I'm not relieved to hear you say that either.
Oh, I'm maturing, I am, Caleb assured him dryly. Having Merlin and Charlie right here at hand to whack me over the head at the drop of a hat tends to have that effect, you know.
Maybe it would if your skull wasn't quite so thick, his wife told him, smiling as she ran her fingers through his hair. He smiled back at her, and she snorted in amusement. But then she leaned back in her own chair and shook her head.